session number 10923, Reel 1.
Mr. Harold Harper, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Harper?
I was born in Sutton in Ashfield in Nottinghamshire on the 13th of December 1918. My father was a miner, but very, very soon after I was born, he left the mines and went into the fishmonger business in Daybrook, which is on the outskirts of Nottingham.
What sort of an upbringing did you have? Was it a comfortable existence?
Very comfortable indeed, because I was unfortunate at the age of 3 to be knocked down by a drunken driver. And consequently, I was sent to a private school because they didn't think that I was quite sufficiently strong enough to withstand an elementary education.
Was your father able to afford that?
And they weren't affluent, but nevertheless, they could, with the fish and chip business, they were able to do a little bit more than the average person.
Which private school did you attend then?
Chestnut House Private School in Arnold, which is another suburb of Nottingham.
What sort of an education did you get there? Was it a day school?
It was a day school, yes.
And what sort of an education was it?
Well, in all fairness, I left there when I was about 8, because they moved then from Daybrook into Nottingham itself. So, in other words, the first 3 years I had the basis of learning a little bit of French and goodness knows what else, which was unusual for children of that age. Never spoke French in my life since, but nevertheless.
What school did you go to after you were 8 then?
When I moved, I went to an elementary school and then got a scholarship to the grammar school, which was high pavement school here in Nottingham, and left there in 1935.
You had a conventional grammar school education. What sort of qualifications did you end up with that?
I finished up with matriculation, which was 5 subjects. Do you want to know the subjects?
No. Was there an OTC at the school?
No, nothing of that nature.
As a child, were you a member of any of the boys' organisations at all?
No, I didn't go into Scouts or Boys' Brigade, no.
What were your main interests? Did you have any hobbies or sporting?
I was very much a cricket. I was school captain of the cricket team, and I played the rugger. And that was about the limit in those days. There was none of these fancy things I have now.
So what year was it you left school then?
I left school in 1935 and joined the local firm Boots, the chemists. As a clerk in an accounting department.
What had pushed you that way? What had made you decide to do that?
The fact I was very mathematically minded. Maths was my strongest subject by miles, and German my second. Yeah.
You stayed in Boots until the war, did you?
That's right, yes.
When you were a young man or growing, did you ever think of joining the Territorials? Because you joined in May 1939. Had you thought of joining before then?
Yes, quite frankly. There was this sort of upsurge from 1938 onwards when one wasn't quite sure what to do. And it was fine. I sort of joined the South Notts Hussars because a local sergeant major was a customer in our fish and chip shop.
Do you remember his name?
Wiggly. B.S.M. Wiggly. He was a regular who was attached to the South Notts Hussars as a PSI, I think they called him in those days, permanent staff instructor.
What did he say that attracted you to it?
I don't know, quite frankly. It was just that I wanted, along with everybody else, to do something. And why I joined the Army, and a lot of my friends joined the RAF in the same office. I think the Army appealed to me, quite frankly.
Had your father been in the Army?
No, he'd been a miner in the First World War, so he was obviously,
Reserved occupation,
that's right, yes.
when you joined, had you any precon? Did you know much about the South Notches? Did they have a large local? No. Did they bulk large in your life before?
No, not whatsoever. I had no idea what I was entering into, quite frankly.
Did you understand they were artillery?
I understood they were artillery. That's just about all, quite frankly.
What did you joined on the 1st of May, mm-hmm. 1939. How did you actually go about joining?
I just turned up at the drill hall.
Which drill hall was that?
Derby Road, and along with many others, and enlisted, quite frankly.
Was there any sort of procedure about enlisting? I mean, what sort of tests or medical?
No, medical tests, of course. Yes, in all fairness, but.
How strict was it?
Not particularly strict. It was very lax.
So what happened when you joined? What was the procedure?
Told to report for drills 2 nights per week. Issued with a pair of overalls, and that was just about it. It was quite slap happy, really. When you look back at it, I mean, I suppose at the time they thought it was all right, but... bearing in mind that the TA in those days was still very much a sort of a family sort of get-together.
Was that the only uniform they issued you with, the overalls?
That's right, at that time. I didn't get a uniform until war was declared.
What do the overalls look like? What pattern?
They were brown overalls. They were for gun drill, of course, that's what it was all about.
So you were issued with these and told to report to the Derby Drill Hall.
That's right.
Derby
Road Drill Hall, 2 nights per week.
Which 2 nights, do you remember?
Tuesdays and Thursdays, I believe, if I can remember rightly. Yeah. And we used to go into the local park, Woolerton Park, and sort of do driving and goodness knows what else.
Now, you joined 107... Which battery had you joined? Which battery were you put in?
I was put in 426 battery. This was the battery of the Sergeant Major Wigley. So, and I, when they asked me what I wanted to do, I said I wanted to be a driver.
What made you say that?
Because I just learned to drive my father's car.
Is that what you got? Yes,
but in all fairness, I didn't make a particularly good job of it, quite frankly.
Was that what you were initially trained?
Initially trained, yes.
What would happen to the drivers on a drill night? What would you be practicing?
It's almost inconceivable because we used to do driving drill. In the same manner that they used to do horse drill. In other words, you'd have a chap in front in an open truck, and he would be doing this sort of business, and like as if he'd got a horse whip, and you'd either turn in a circle, or you'd close together, or you'd go apart, or whatever it was, and there were four trucks in line. You see, that's the way we worked it.
What was each truck for?
It was a gun tying truck.
So it was one for each gun.
One for each gun. That's right. Yeah.
And how was the battery organised at that time? Can you give me a rough outline of how?
Very difficult, because one bears in mind one's a very raw recruit, completely baffled by it all. You more or less turned up and did what you were told to do, and then went home. The thing lasted from 7 till 9, I think it was, and that was the be-all and end-all.
What other kinds of training were you given? Were you given any basic drill, the ordinary drill of soldiering?
No. Bear in mind that the problem at the time was people were joining in such numbers that they were unable to give specific training to individuals. I think they were all sort of... What they were trying to do was to get everybody organised, ready for camp. And camp, of course, came in June. And then the idea was, when we got to camp, we really sort of got down to basics and started to learn a little bit. But Whilst we were in before camp, we did very, very little that I can even remember, quite frankly.
How did you get on with the other members of 426 when you first joined?
Very, very well, because it was I had several friends in the battery, chaps I knew. We're very much aware that the sergeants and the bombardiers in those days were miners who, shall we say, were a little bit rough, but nevertheless very warm-hearted, and they initially resented the grammar school types, but very quickly sort of settled down to mixing together. Quite.
What do you mean by rough? Could you just explain?
Well, in all fairness, language, the sort of language we'd never heard before, quite frankly.
Would they use that to
the
you on trip?
The fact that they were very, very heavy drinkers, but no, they didn't use that. They didn't put any pressure on us from the point of view of drills and things like that. In general, they were very helpful. Yeah.
What about the officers? Did you see much of them in the early days?
Not really. They were very raw, from what I can remember. They'd been pushed into positions, probably through family influence. I think they found it heavy going, quite frankly. I think it was still very much a sort of a playboy attitude.
Were they respected by the
Yes, men? Oh yes. I think in those days, everybody respected a senior rank. This was something very, very important. And certainly one or two of the officers I can remember, Captain Barber and Captain Birkin, and one or two more were very sort of, looked to be very competent, and certainly got the finger on the pulse. But many of the subalterns were very green indeed.
When you went to camp, which camp did you go to?
We went to Reedsdale in Northumberland, which was on the Scottish border. It rained pretty well for the whole fortnight. I never felt so miserable in all my life. I mean, first time I'd left home, roughing it with the food and everything else was just about a disaster as far as I was concerned. Never been used to the boozing habits of the older members, who seemed to think it was wonderful to get away from the wives for a fortnight. All I could think about was my girlfriend who I'd left in Nottingham and can't get back fast enough, quite frankly. But I suppose at the end of it all, I'd learned something. What? I mean, deployment and things like that, which we'd never had before.
I'll come to that. With being in camp for the first time, you were in tents, I presume?
In tents, yes.
Did you find the lack of privacy?
Yes, and terrible. Yes, the lack of privacy was something which really was shaking, and to come away from a reasonable family background, and, yeah, that was... Yeah, I've never been asked that question before, but as I remember it, it was shattering, this lack of privacy, definitely.
What about the older members, the drinking ones? Would you go drinking with them, or did they
no.
go?
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't. They got their own cliques in those days. They would clique, and they found great fun in coming and tipping people out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning and that sort of thing, and turning them out and.
Was there any actual bullying?
No, not really bullying, no.
So it's no, more practical jokes?
It's all practical jokes rather than bullying, yeah.
How did the other... Did you form your own group of...
Yes, I think that's right. We we young lads formed our own sort of little society. I think we sought solace in each other, quite frankly. But now this business of getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and going on the ranges and that, and going through the driving through the clouds as you do up in Reedsdale, was a bit of a shaker. But nevertheless, as far as I can remember, you'd already got that thought in the mind that you were doing something for king and country, and that it was very important.
So the approach of war was
I think the imminence of war was sufficient to drive you into that.
What exactly did you do at the camp then? What you said they'd been waiting to get you there to start training you properly.
Well, we occupied gun positions there again my job was simply to take the gun into position and then drive back to the wagon lines and just sit there and wait while somebody beckoned me up again, so to speak. And in other words, it was a question of doing what one was told. I think, from what I can vaguely remember, the command posts, and they were having some sort of difficulty in being established and getting to know the procedures. I think it was all very, very much of a hodgepodge at the time.
So you still were only trained as a driver?
As a driver.
You didn't have any gun drill training?
No, I didn't get any gun drill training, and I never got any gun drill training until very, very much later in the war. But that's coming later, of course.
How about your actual driving? Were you a good enough driver?
No, I would say straight away no. I made many mistakes.
What was the problem?
I think the size of the vehicle, the weight of the vehicle, something which one had never sort of known before, quite frankly.
Were you expected to have any mechanical knowledge?
No. In all fairness, we weren't expected to have. You know, we got our own mechanics.
So you were purely just a driver.
Just a driver. Mm.
So what, the wagon line, how was that established? Because you wouldn't have the horses they used to have.
No, the wagon line, you were just directed back into them by the troop sergeant major. And he used to just come along and say, you watch for me, and when I want you, I shall stand on the top of that hill and wave you up, you know, that sort of thing. It was all very impersonal, if you like.
And what would a wagon line look like?
Well, it was just a question of when you call it, say, the wagon lines, you were put into an area probably about 300 or 400 yards behind the guns, so you didn't interfere with what was going off, and all we did was sit back and swap stories, quite frankly.
That's not a very complicated role. Were you looking for something more challenging? Because you didn't stay in driving.
No, I didn't. I at the time I wasn't. I was still quite happy just to be sort of doing exactly what I was told. Bearing in mind that one knew that the fortnight was going to be over anyway, and You got back to Civvy Street and got on with your job.
Were you aware of any of the competitions that went on at camp?
No. There were competitions, I knew, but I never got involved in them, quite frankly.
So that played no part for you?
It played no part for me at all, no.
After your experience at camp, how did you feel about the whole thing?
Quite candid, I couldn't get home fast enough. It didn't do anything great for me. I had no sort of urge to sort of dash off back again, like one or two who volunteered to go to camp with the second line to Bridlington in August.
At 150th.
At 150th, that's right. Yeah, I'd no desire, quite frankly. I was a little bit of a reluctant soldier. I'm going to be honest about that at the time. Change a bit later, but...
So when you got back, drill nights recommenced, did
That's
they?
Right, yes.
And you carried on with your training as a driver.
That's right.
And were you a driver right until when the
Brits... The outside of war.
Well, when you were actually... during that last two or three months before you were embodied, did the pace of training speed up?
Yes. Yeah, a little bit. Because, don't forget, having got some sort of a formation going at camp, then at least we knew a little bit more about which troop we were in and what we were doing and why we were doing it, so to speak. We had learned sufficient at camp to know what the formation of the battery was. I mean, in those days, nobody sort of stood in front of you and said, this is what we're doing. We are going to do this and we're going to do that. Not like in later on in the war, when it was our job to sort of explain to everybody what was happening.
Do you think that a bit more communication as to what was
going
on?
There was no communication at all.
Would it have helped you?
Oh yes, I'm sure it would. As one looks back at it, definitely, you know that about that. And but at the time, we never thought any different.
What troop were you know by now? What troop you were
in? I was in Don Troop, or D Troop. Mm.
And who was your officer?
Well, no, I can't remember. Quite frankly, I couldn't possibly remember that. No.
So, as the training went on, you still only got your training in driving. You still only practiced your driving job. Did you feel that it would have helped to have known a bit about the other sides of it?
That's right. Yes, on reflection, definitely. And I'm coming to that very, very shortly, actually, because if someone would have had a little bit more, what shall we say, initiative in seeking people out, then I wouldn't have been a driver as long as I was, quite frankly. Because, do you want me to go on from here?
Yes, you can.
Well, because after we'd been embodied... for about a fortnight, I'd met certain friends whilst we were still in Nottingham, that is. We were in a factory in Ilkeston Road. And they were all what they call specialists. And another term being surveyors. And I found that all you had to do to be a surveyor was to know a bit of trigonometry, quite frankly. And trigonometry was one of my strong subjects. And
so you feel...
I went to the sergeant major and told him I'd like to be a specialist in the... He sort of nearly dropped through the earth and said, you know, you've got to be something really good to be one of those. And what he really meant was it was out of his... He didn't really understand it. But so from about the third week of the war, I became a surveyor.
And you feel that they could have spotted the...
Well,
yes,
I'm sure. I'm sure. On reflection, you'd have thought that somebody with a grammar school background that would have said, "Well, you know, do you know trigonometry or algebra or anything like that?" And
now, what was it about? You went into survey. What about the other specialist field, signalling, which also was something that...
No.
Your background might have helped. Did that attract you at all?
No, it didn't, actually. I was very much attracted to survey.
What attracted you to survey, then?
The trigonometry aspect of it. The sines, cosines and tangents.
You just enjoyed the mathematics?
I loved it, quite frankly.
Right, well, stepping back just a bit, how did you hear the news that you were embodied on the 27th of August, 39? How did you hear that news?
I was at the office. And we got a message saying that was on September the 1st. And we all, well, the office I was in, nine young lads walked out of an office of about 20 people on the Friday afternoon.
How did the office feel about that? I mean, did they?
Well, nothing, you know, everybody was very patriotic.
And, how did you feel? Because you were a reluctant soldier.
I was very down. Obviously, we're all sort of down at the mouth, quite frankly. Yeah.
So you didn't, you weren't pleased about the outbreak of war?
No. We'd no idea. But the only thing was, there was this ridiculous talk about it would be over by Christmas and all this sort of business. So that's the only thing that kept us going, or kept me going anyway.
Did you fear that it would be like the First World War? Did you have any idea of what it would be like?
No, I'd seen pictures of the First World War, I don't know. You always got this impression that your regiment wouldn't be involved in that sort of thing. Little did we know.
So when
it's passed as well, we didn't.
So you were called from the office. They'd been embodied on the 27th. So you were called from the office on the 1st.
First, that's right. Yeah.
And you had to. Is that? Did
1st
you
of September. That was a Friday, Friday afternoon. I went to reported to Derby Road Drill Hall.
And what happened there?
And 426 Battery Headquarters were moved down into a factory off Ilkeston Road, Hollins Factory, a rat-infested place. And there we were kitted out with tin helmets and...
Do you remember what kit exactly you were given?
Oh, got battle dress, boots, and we were given £5 embodiment fee or whatever it was, and £5 bounty for going to camp. And with £10 in my pocket, I felt to be a millionaire, quite frankly, because £10 was a lot of money.
How were you spread about at Hollins Factory? Was there any sort of bedding provided?
No, just lay on the floor. They just probably chucked, everybody got a blanket or something like that. Just lay on the stone on the concrete floor.
Did you find that very uncomfortable? Or?
Oh well, it is, in those days you didn't mind. I suppose it was the only comfort you got really was knowing that everybody was in the same plight. They'd all come from reasonably good homes, and that was it.
So, what happened then?
With no idea what was in store, of course. I mean, it was still, to a certain extent, a little bit of a joke.
Yeah. There, you were at Hollins Factory for about 3 weeks, I think.
About 3 weeks,
before you went to Rillington, Malton.
Rillington, that's it, yeah.
What did you do during those 3 weeks? I mean, was there any training or...
There was, to be honest, they were just glad to get us out off their hands for the time being. We used to go on route marches around Nottingham with a regimental band. Anything to try and keep... Because I think they were still in the process of getting, you know, we've been made right, up to strength, and still in the process of weeding out the ones who would not be allowed to go abroad and that sort of thing, you see.
I'll come back to that, but you say you went on route marches. What would you take with you on a route march?
Well, just nothing in particular. But,
you wouldn't take your, you'd just be marching then?
That's right, yeah.
How did you find that?
Oh, I enjoyed it. That was one part that... I'm sorry, I ought to have said when I was at school I also did a lot of athletics. Yeah.
So you didn't find the distance marched?
Oh, no problem.
And how far would you go?
Oh, probably 10, 15 miles.
Did many of the other men find it more difficult?
Oh, no, not really. No, we were all young lads of 19, 20.
Yeah. What about the reception you got as you went through the local area?
Always got a good reception, quite frankly. People were very, shall we say, military orientated those days. They were always very, very sorry, particularly for the young lads.
What would they do as you marched through, say, a village? What would a typical reception be? What would people do?
Nothing except waving, that's all, you know. And, no sort of, not quite like after we'd won a few battles later on in the war, which was a different kettle of fish altogether.
So it's just friendly?
Just friendly.
Was there any, you took the band with you, you say, was there any recruiting element in this?
No. I think there was an embarrassment of recruits. That was one of the problems why we didn't do an awful lot of training in Nottingham. It wasn't until we got up to Rillington that we really settled down to training.
Now, the other thing you mentioned...
By which time I was doing surveying then.
So. Good, come. The other thing you mentioned was that there was a weeding out programme while you were in Nottingham. Were you aware of that at the time?
Not really. Nobody ever approached me with regards to moving into any other battery. But the younger ones, they were moved into the second line because somebody at the top must have known that the 1st Cavalry Division, which would include the first line, would be eventually moving out somewhere.